opinions voiced in Investing Simplified with Bo Caldwell are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Investors cannot invest directly in indexes. The performance of any index is not indicative of the performance of any investment and does not take into account the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. Guests on Investing Simplified are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Price Financial Group, wealth management.
We do Investing Simplified. Welcome in to Investing Simplified. However you're listening to us today, thanks for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, if you miss parts of the show or just would like to listen to a replay of our sultry, soothing voices, you can get the show wherever you download podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Google Play, Apple Music, any of the above. You can also visit our website, www.pfgwm.com, and find the show archived there. So in studio with me today is Matt and Matt. We got the Matts back together. It's the BOM squared show.
That's what today. We call ourselves. But, hey.
Hey, which is just great. And, you know, I know we've had some things on our minds and, you know, and I got to start today by apologizing to listeners. We've been having some logistical troubles getting Kevin and Taylor in to record with us to come on the show, but they are here. If you send in questions and you have a question that needs to be answered by the tax animal or by, you know, wondering for a cover your assets sort of question, they are available to answer those questions. As Kevin gets kind of into the tax season, it's a little bit harder to get him in, but we got the crew here, the BOM squared, the Matts are here. Matts, you know, why don't you tell me, I'd like to start today, just tell me a little bit about what's on your mind, what's been eating you up, what's been keeping you up at night in terms of, you know, markets.
I would say not necessarily keeping me up at night, but it has been pretty thrilling to see some of the activity that's happened over the last month or so, and really the last year or so. It has been some fascinating action in the markets. Lately, we've seen some just really all-out insane gains. I mean, that's an extreme word, yeah. But we can see some insane activity, huge percentage gains.
In some specific sectors, like we had the cannabis sector just blow up for a couple of days, then drop, and then there was electric vehicle sector blew up and started dropping and tempered off. So we've got these pops that are happening in different sectors of the market.
Yeah, GameStop, that one went up huge, yeah. And then, of course, it came back crashing down to earth and is way lower again. So that's been a really popular story. I don't hear as many people talking about the fall from the very top, which was well over $400 to where it's, you know, currently at. So we got to make sure we focus on the full side of the story. It's nice to be in on those kinds of investments when they pop like that. But if we're moving that fast, you have to be nimble and be able to get out of those to capture those gains. So just a word of the wise, as we've said, if you hit a home run, you got to take some bases. And what I mean by that, when you have a big gain, one of the hardest things to do is take some of it. So if you are sitting on certainly 100% gain in a month or a year, that's a lot of gains in a short period of time. I mean, the stock market average is like 8% over a long period of time per year. And if you're sitting on 100% gains in a month or a year, it's
100%
probably,
gains at any point, I would say, right?
I know.
Just short term.
Really?
Just if you hit 100%. Yeah, it's time to maybe take some risk off the table, right? We've talked before, and what a strategy that I like, and I like to implement when, you know, with clients that are, you know, that have those speculative trades on. If someone's got a speculative trade on, if you've bought a stock or have a position that is up 100%, why not sell half? Because then at that point, you can't lose, right? You're now playing with house money, and it's easy math. You're up 100%, sell half of it. Now, no matter what happens, even if that stock goes to zero,
you still don't lose.
You still broke even.
And then focus on where you put the other half, right? So if a stock really ramped up higher, that's intrinsically, which means inside your account, heating up your portfolio. Because obviously something low risk usually doesn't move to that extreme of a degree. So if it's volatile, it's probably an equity or a higher risk investment. And if it jumps that much, it's increased the risk inside your portfolio. So when you're taking those gains, think about diversifying to other opportunities that, you know, it's as hard to do to take gains as it is to look in the rearview mirror to say, hey, those investments haven't worked out so well in the last 1, 3, 5 years. Are those opportunities though? So you really want to be looking not necessarily in the rearview mirror for what looks to be a better investment going forward out the front window.
Right.
Yeah, but as we said, money flows out of one asset class into another. So you're picking up whatever else is maybe underperforming, and then maybe the next thing that goes back up. You know, now it's, some of it is a guessing game, but through diversification, you can sort of try to cast a wider net and catch it all a little bit equally.
So going back to your point, Bo, asking me what keeps me up at night, I said that's something that is intriguing me. But I would say one of the concerns that I'm starting to see is that I'm getting calls out of the blue from normally just regular usual investors that like to hit singles and doubles. If they get a triple or a homer every once in a while, they're super excited and ecstatic. And they're calling me up and saying, hey, I want to throw $25,000 at this stock that's only been around for 3 weeks. It does tend to signal, I mean, this is locally, of course, but it does, you know, when those types of calls and questions come in, like, what do you think about the stock that just came out yesterday? Is it going to be the next big thing for the next decade? Nobody really knows. I mean, there's no track record to base it on. It's just purely speculation, which is pretty much pure risk. So we tend to stick towards those investments that are tried and true and have a better long-term track record.
Right. I think that's an important point, right, is to look at what has long-term track record. Doesn't mean you can't dabble, right, if you want to have these, you know, the idea I like to think about, it's a core and explore sort of philosophy, right, mostly because it rhymes, but also because it makes a lot of sense. You have your core portfolio, right, that is going to be that all-weather portfolio, and then you can explore. You can have these satellite positions of a GameStop if you wanted to, or an IPO that's just coming out, or these new things called SPACs, these special purpose acquisition companies that are out there that are kind of all the rage, especially if you're online, right, and you see these Wall Street Bets or these other various, you know, services. YouTube's got people all the time telling you, you know, what stocks to buy, when to buy them, and that sort of thing. But so if you're doing that, then that should be, you know, kind of that satellite position, because, you know, our view is that over the long run, having that core portfolio, while we may miss out on those 100% gainers, what we're going to hopefully miss out on is the 100% losers, right? I mean, you know, over time, that makes sense.
I do like that core and explore. I'm going to borrow from you on that one. I like that. So I was reading something this past week, and it was something regarding how you could do with a fully invested portfolio in the S&P 500 compared to a portfolio that took less risk. So in this example, you know, we are aiming to win more by losing less. So it was
That's key. Before you go into it, I just want to win more by losing less. So remember that, folks, because he's going to go over stuff here.
Yeah, it was saying basically if you had invested about $100,000 in the S&P 500 back in October of 2007, you know, this is before the big crash, recently at the end of 2020, it would be worth about $319,700.
Okay, so we invested $100,000.
Yep.
Right before the crash. Right.
Yep. Right before the crash.
A poor timing, right? Which we're, you know, we're
pretty much the worst timing in the last 70 sure. years, something like that.
So that speaks to why owning stocks over time can really make a lot of sense, especially to combat inflation. So what you just said was you bought at the exact wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
You bought just the general market, a little more than three times your money over the last 11, 12 years.
Exactly.
Okay. Well,
yep. So if you had invested instead in a hypothetical portfolio that only captured 62% of that upside, but it also only captured 62% of the downside, your portfolio would actually have grown to $320,000 over that same period of time.
Okay. So if we are all in full board, 100,000 to 320,000. And if you're 65% risk, or a 62%
upside capture and 62% downside capture, that actually turned out to be half as volatile as the just riding the S&P 500 up and down the whole time.
Okay.
So you reduced your volatility, your ups and down swings, by 50%, and you actually slightly outperformed.
Slightly more money with it, taking less risk.
Yeah, $5,000 more in your pocket.
Sounds like the turtle in the, what is it?
The tortoise in the hare.
Exactly, is what it kind of sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about the other key to think about in that situation is if you put that whole 100,000 into the S&P 500, not only did you have to put it in the S&P 500, you had to ride out those dips, and you would have had to go all the way down, peak to trough, folks. So here's the
deal. That was a rough road right there.
October 2007, when the market went down, peak to trough, was it 52%?
53, yeah. Bottomed out in March of 2009, and that October 2007 to March 2009 was pretty much a straight fall. There were some kind of false
dead cat bounces
like, it eventually hit bottom in March of 2009. I mean, certainly any dollars that you had invested, if you were working at the time and participating in your 401k or just happened to be making that year's IRA or Roth contribution or what have you, and you got money in the market March of 2009, that's a whole lot better than three times your money right there.
Yeah, right before March, though, it felt like probably like throwing money into a fiery pit that just you put it in and it dropped lower. But
right.
That's sort of how investing works. You just don't know which way it's going to go immediately, right?
So. Right. Well, and the key is there, you know, if you have a question about that, which comes up, the question begs itself, how do we get 62% of the risk, right? How do we get 65% of the risk? And there's no right answer, but if you'd like to look at how your portfolio stacks up to that 62% risk, and 62% is a number that Matt showed you to see about half the downside. It's a conceptual. That doesn't mean that 62% of the risk is right for you.
Right.
But if you're looking at that sort of a portfolio over a 12-year period to have the same or slightly better performance. So if you haven't reviewed your portfolio in a while, if you haven't analyzed it, benchmarked it against how much risk you're actually taking, give our office a call, 503-253-3000, and we'll sit down with you. We'll break it down for you. We use, you know, nice software that shows and breaks it down, you know, when we're talking at looking at it objectively, that's the word I was looking for, not optimistically, objectively say, this is how much risk your portfolio has, right?
Yeah. Puts it through the stress test. We look at it in good years, bad years, ugly years, and even that's on the stock side. We would also look at it how it would handle rising interest rates. I know we've talked about that, but we're seeing rising interest rates now. And if you're a really conservative investor, it's like, no big deal. I don't ride those stock roller coasters. But if you're a conservative investor right about now, you need to be paying attention to what's happening with interest rates, because we're pumping trillions of dollars into the economy in the near future. And we've just gotten done pumping trillions of dollars into the economy in the last, you know, calendar 11 months. So eventually we would think that interest rates are going to start popping higher. And we're already starting to see evidence of that.
A little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And even with the Fed saying they're not going to, you know, tighten, you're not going to have monetary tightening. They're not tightening until they see, you know, significant improvement in the overall, you know, outlook for individuals,
right?
Especially lower income individuals. So you couple that with the fact that interest rates are still rising. To me, that means as soon as they start tightening, there's going to be a significant increase in interest rates, right?
Right. And just remember, when you're hearing about the Fed adjusting interest rates, they're talking about the overnight Fed funds rate. That's a very short-term loan between the Fed and the banks. And, you know, banks use that to base what they're going to pay in
savings
CDs, accounts, is like 0.01% right now, or pretty close to low, all-time zero levels. But, you know, that's not necessarily those long-term rates, like a 20-year mortgage or a 30-year mortgage rate.
Right.
So those, I mean, they're really, really low right now, those long-term rates, but they have been climbing a little bit now. Back in the bottom of 2020, the 10-year Treasury touched around 0.41%. 0.41% interest on a 10-year bond. Right now, it's pricing close to about 1.15-ish%, plus or minus. I mean, it's moving a little bit day by day. But about 1.15 already.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So you want to make sure that you have, because when you say the 62% risk of the S&P 500, then, you know, what will come up for a lot of people is, okay, well, then if I want to be, then I'm 62% stocks, 38% bonds, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're 62% risk, because bonds have risk, especially in the interest rate environment like we've been in.
One way to look at it, and we talked about this on the show before, is we use our software that we use uses a scale of 1 to 99. And actually, within the last couple of weeks, I did have a listener that gave me an opportunity to just take a look at their portfolio. And basically what it came down to is we compare their portfolio against the S&P as being the benchmark. And Matt brought this up before, that it's a speed limit 75. And I believe they were about a speed limit 65 on their portfolio. And then I put together a proposed portfolio tweaks that then showed them another one that's 65. So then you're comparing 65 speed limit, call it, to 65.
Apples to apples.
Apples to apples. And interestingly enough, the portfolio proposal, it lagged about 2% on the upside. But on the downside, you know, it saved them about 5% or so on the risk side. So, you know, let's just say that their portfolio was earning 12%. So then, you know, the one I showed them showed 10, which is still pretty decent capture. On the downside, though, you know, theirs were showing negative 15, while the one I showed them was maybe down only 10. So you're kind of managing the downside and how low will it go. But they both have about the same risk scale. So it's
win more by losing
less. Exactly. Yeah. So you're comparing the two in that fashion. So
that's, and then kind of tying it into those individual stocks that we were talking about a moment ago, I have another stat that says over the last 5 years, roughly 34% of stocks lost money, and during that same time frame, only 0.2% of all mutual funds and ETFs lost money.
Wow, interesting.
So if you're building that portfolio with the individual stocks, just know that, you know, when we say higher risk, an individual stock will inherently have higher risk because it's all your money on that one horse versus a mutual fund or an ETF. Generally owns many different investments inside that vehicle.
Just spreading and diversifying your risk, right?
Yeah, casting a wider net.
Yeah, exactly. Making sure, you know, the thought process being that if you break one, you know, if you break one egg, you got the rest of the eggs in the basket, right? The idea being you're not going to be
just don't drop the basket.
You're not going to be out on your own with just the one stock. And what if the one stock doesn't work well, right? So that can really hurt you. If you're not doing that. So, Matt, I know you got to get out of here. So we're gonna say take a break here and say goodbye to Matt. But then Matt Sudol and I will be back with more Investing Simplified after the break. If you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, we'd love to answer it, tell you what we think. It may not be the right answer for you, but the key caveat that goes in here is everything we talk about on the show, when we talk about taking less risk in the market, we talk about individual stocks. That is not a recommendation for you specifically. It always behooves you to do your own due diligence, to meet with a financial advisor or a tax professional when going over any of our ideas. These are the ways that we look at it, the ways that we manage our clients' money, the ways that we manage our clients' risk, but it may or may not be applicable to you. So if you'd like to have that risk analysis, if you'd like to have that complimentary portfolio review, like Matt talked about, talk about the win more by losing less, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. We'll tell you what we think. We'll tell you what it looks like to us. And if it makes sense to you, we'd be happy to work with you. And if not, worst case scenario is you spent an hour with a professional that got a second opinion on your current situation. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
Leaving an employer can be stressful and overwhelming. But once the dust settles and you're at a new job or perhaps retired, it is important to consider your options for that retirement plan left behind. If this situation applies and you would like to hear more about options available for 401k, 403b, or other retirement account rollovers, please give our office a call at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation with someone on the team to go over your specific and individual situation. We will take the time to get to know you, your goals, and let you know what the best course of action is for you and your family.
We do Investing Simplified.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, you missed the opening segment we had here with the BOM Squared Group, and Matt May had an appointment he had to get to, so he had to jet out of the studio here. But it's still me, Bo Caldwell, here with Matt Sudol. We're here to answer questions, to bring you financial knowledge, basically just to share with you all that we know, which is, you know, startlingly small amounts, but
if you really are dying to hear what Matt said and you just turned in now, you can always listen to our replays on our website. Through our website, there's podcasts, links to podcasts, and you can download it on your phone, so you can listen to them on your convenience, because there's some good content he provided. I think
so too. And one of the things he talked about, and you know, we've talked ad nauseum about, is you know, balancing your risk-adjusted return, right? Measuring your risk, and he mentioned it, taking 62% of the S&P. You mentioned when we do, when we put portfolios through the software that analyzes their risk, we use the S&P as a benchmark. But the key that, you know, I keep belaboring this point, but when you're comparing yourself to the S&P, you need to compare it to how you are invested on a risk-adjusted basis compared to the S&P. Because unless you're owning the S&P, right, you're not going to do what the S&P does. And here's the thing about looking at the S&P, and a lot of people don't realize, but and I've talked about it before, but there are five companies that make up more than 20% of the S&P 500. Five whole companies, right? You bring when Tesla got added to the S&P 500, it was bigger than the next five companies combined, which is crazy, right? But
wow.
But you had Tesla, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, you know, Google. These companies make up a huge portion of the S&P.
But it also puts things in perspective too, right? When we look at this report that it generates, it puts your portfolio on one side, and it puts a proposal, you know, tweaks on the other side, and it puts S&P in the middle, because S&P 500 is the one that's talked about most, right? So a lot of times I'll meet with people that are, you know, not experts in the financial matters, which is fine, and I'll ask them, you know, what do you know? And a lot of time I get the feedback of, oh, I've heard of the Dow, or I've heard of the S&P 500. Sometimes people ask me, well, what does that really mean? And so this puts things in perspective. And so, you know, pulling up the report, it'll tell you that, you know, for example, it'll say that between January 1st of 2008 through December 31st, 2008, you know, how much did the overall index fall? And then if you had the investments you currently have back then, what would your portfolio do? And it really puts things in perspective where on the upside, when things are going up, everybody loves that, right? And so it's like, oh, I want to meet and exceed what the index is doing, the S&P, for example. But not everyone is so keen on the pain. I mean, nobody really likes to have their portfolio go red. You know, it's just not fun.
Well, we don't like it either, right? No, we don't like when clients' portfolios go red. Absolutely, but interestingly enough, that, you know, there have been numerous studies that have been done on it, and it's a human psychological behavior, right? The pain of loss is much, much stronger than the pain of missing out on upside. And surprisingly enough, it's actually much stronger. It hurts a lot more to lose than it feels good to win. You know what I mean? It's a human psychological behavior where you say, okay, well, you look at, you know, you got a lot of people that are asking about GameStop or asking about the marijuana stocks or any of these other companies that just go gangbusters right over a small period of time. And they think about, oh God, you got this fear of missing out deal, the FOMO, right?
Yeah. They're going green, green, green.
And they think that that's great, but I can tell you it hurts way worse to grab something and try to grab lightning in a bottle and have it go to zero or have it go way down. You know, 50% loss is way harder to recover from psychologically than missing out on a 50% gain.
And also as things fall, the fall accelerates, right? Which is why there's breakers that have been put in place since, you know, the financial crisis. So if the market drops by, I forgot what it is, 10% or something like that, it'll turn on the breaker. And then there's another one after that. So that way, you know, because if everybody's selling, there's a panic and people just push the button and say, sell, sell, sell. And so what happens is individuals and, you know, are selling their mutual funds or ETFs. And so then the fund managers have to raise the money to sell it. And so then you have these gobs of money going out. And so it makes it accelerate and sell even quicker.
Well, and then you have the algorithms that are watching, the computers that are watching with the $1 billion funds to hit that. And then there's what a thing called a sell stop, right? Mm-hmm. Where people have stops set in place. And that's it, on these companies in these stocks that have gone up, you know, parabolic.
Yeah.
You get these, hey, this is going up and going up and going up, and everybody's moving their stop, right? They're saying, okay, well, now I'm moving it up here, and as soon as it starts hitting those stops, then that causes the price to go down further. Like you said, it compounds on itself. And there's an old adage, and people have trouble thinking about it, right? But the idea is that, you know, when the market goes up slowly and comes down quick, right? Yeah. So, you know, the plan should be making sure that you are protecting yourself from the downside, because it comes down, you know, it takes an escalator up and an elevator down, right? Mm-hmm. Because when it comes down, it tends to come down a lot faster and a lot harder.
Well, gravity helps it.
Than it has taken up. And especially when you're looking at the market has melted up so fast and come back so fast that you got to be primed and ready for these reversals, these, you know, when the market does have a correction, and they're normal and needed, right?
Yeah. So in the last segment, you kind of asked, you know, what's been keeping us up at night, and I talked about it and I touched on it. But for me, it's been thinking of that next pullback, because I do, you know, I could kind of say it, feel it in my bones. I mean, everybody kind of feels like, hey, we're getting up pretty high. At some point, we'll see, you know, a 10% correction, which wouldn't really be that big a deal considering how far we've gone up and sort of ratcheted up over time.
Right.
You know, but 10-15% could happen. I'm just trying to think, okay, when will it happen? And nobody really knows. So I had a meeting within the last couple of weeks with a listener, and it was a conversation about, well, why are we talking about the past? You know, why are we reviewing what's happened in the past, you know, in considerations to the portfolio I have? And my answer was pretty simple. I really don't know what's going to happen in the future. But if we had a time machine and went back in the past and relived those parts of history, this is what it would look like for you. Then I can give you some realistic figures that would have happened, you know, assuming things are the same. It is very difficult to predict what will happen in the future, which is why, you know, we got to control what we can, which is, you know, the risk we're taking and the goals we're setting, making sure they're reasonable. And
yeah, well, the idea that, you know, the stocks only go up or the market only goes up is incorrect, right? And over time, historically, it has always gone up, right? Yes. But that takes time. Yeah. And the other thing to think about, so this is an interesting point to make when we think about the markets. You think about how the markets behave, and that it comes to the point, and it behooves you to, if you've thought about stocks or invested in individual stocks, so an interesting phenomena happens in stocks. We, you know, as we just got through earnings season where, you know, stocks, you know, big companies reporting earnings, oftentimes a company comes out and you'll see it beat earnings expectations. So there were certain expectations that they had, analyst expectations, market expectations, and they beat it.
Mm-hmm.
But the stock goes down.
Right.
Right. And the reason is, A, because stocks behave emotionally, not rationally, but B, because that earnings beat was already priced into the stock.
Yeah, and it maybe wasn't as big of a beat, right? Or maybe one of the additional factors, because usually what's reported is that earnings per share is the number that comes up, you know? Yep. But maybe they had a, you know,
lower revenue per
share. Some sort of a lower revenue number, or maybe some random expense that came up that they weren't expecting. Or a lot of times in these earning calls, they'll tell you what'll be happening in the next quarter or 6 months with the company. So they may say, hey, you know, in the next 6 months, we're also planning these expenditures.
Right, right.
Or, you know, we're planning an acquisition. So so then it's interestingly enough, these things happen within seconds, really, because the price gets adjusted immediately, right? And they talk about how efficient the market is. Well, as soon as that information hits, somehow trading happens already and the market price goes up and down.
Right, right.
So it pretty much immediately adjusts. So, you know, and that's why you shouldn't really focus, obviously, on when earnings are popping up or day-to-day activities of stocks individually. You know, if you're broadly diversified, looking at things over a longer period of time and just kind of, you know, as much as it's exciting maybe to listen to an earnings call and look, you know, let's say you have a fund of some sort and you know that some of the top holdings are, you know, some of the larger companies, you know, it'd be fun. Say, hey, it looks like whatever the company was, you know, it beat earnings and it's going up. Oh, that probably means my overall fund will go up and down. So, so that part of it is, you know, interesting to always look at.
Right. No, that, you know, that it makes sense. It's difficult to look at the market and see the difference, that the dichotomy of the economy and, you know, where we are from a perspective of reopening and from where, you know, we're going, and sort of just kind of pricing that out, right? So what happens when people say, you know, the market's just going to keep going up, right? Because we're going to be reopening, there's going to be this increased demand, and I think all those things are true, right? But some of it is priced in, because you think about, the market is forward-looking, right? So if you look at the bond market right now, it's telling us that the economy is poised to boom, the economy.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean the market. The economy does not equal the market, right? So the market, by the time that the economy starts actually coming out of this, you know, this medically induced coma that we've been in, right, for the last year or so, then we start coming out and the economic numbers start looking better. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the market's going to look better, because the market may have priced a good amount of that in already, right?
Well, that's kind of, you know, same with earnings, right? The company's reporting earnings it had just met, so that's priced in.
Right.
What they're going to project for the future is what's going to drive the future price a lot too, right?
Right.
So if you're a long-term investor, you know, what the company announces in earnings, it's good to see that they're, you know, beating expectations or meeting expectations that they're growing. But what's probably more important is looking, what are they going to do in the future? How are they going to evolve and, you know, maybe go into different sectors of whatever they're doing and expanding their business, basically, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Well, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to know what's coming. We have our predictions. Everybody has their crystal ball predictions. But if you'd like to see how your portfolio would have done, like Matt said, in 2008, in a situation like that, in a rising interest rate environment, all we can do is look at the past to prepare ourselves for the future, right? The caveat always comes, past performance is not indicative of future results, right? Yep. But the idea is building a portfolio that's ready to weather whatever's coming, right? So that's what we try to do. We try to put together a portfolio that weathers whatever is going to come in the future. And if you'd like to have that review, this is something that other firms around town, other firms here in Portland, let alone in Washington or in various places around the country, charge $1,000-$2,000 for plans like sure. that we put together for yeah. people. We do it for free, right? We do it as a complimentary service to our listeners. And the idea is that the only cost to you is an hour of your time, right? It takes some time to sit down with one of our advisors to talk to us, to tell it, you got to be open, right? You got to talk about your goals and what's going on and what you're looking to do. But we're happy to put that plan together. And if it makes sense to work with us, we're happy to work with you. But otherwise,
I will throw in a caveat that we are sometimes kind of a chatty Cathy person. So it may take us a little bit over an hour, So it's good to put in an hour.
Sure.
It could be an hour and a half or two, but it's still going to be at no cost because we do enjoy helping listeners and just, giving back to the community. And then, we get great feedback from it. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Especially Matt, and we can talk smack about him because he's left the room, but he does like to get long winded. But
I think all of us do a little bit. Yeah. I was in, overheard your appointment that was supposed to have been a half an hour that went 45 minutes or 50 minutes almost.
Yeah, people ask good questions, man. You got to.
It was a lot of you talking about, your trip or whatever it was.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. All right. But so, if you'd like to get that done, give us a call 503-253-3000 or shoot us an email to askbo@pfgwm.com or go ahead and visit our website right at pfgwm.com. One of the things where people get hung up on, like we talked about, is these individual stocks. And you mentioned that the term used is a long-term investor. You mentioned that before.
Right.
If you're a long-term investor, it really doesn't matter what the day-to-day market noise is, right? And that's funny. I've talked about it before, but the question I get a lot is, what did the market do today? And a lot of times I'll tell them, I don't know, right? Because unless something drastic is happening, I don't know, and I don't care what the market's doing on a day-to-day basis, right? Because we're prepared for whatever's coming. We want to be prepared for what changes. But you hear noise out of Washington. You hear noise out of any of these analyst calls, any in the above of all of those things. It doesn't really make a difference.
And I think pretty much everybody should be a long-term investor. I mean, think about it. If you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, you got to be looking long-term, even if you're in your 60s or even 70s, because people are living longer.
Right.
the statistical numbers, a lot of us are going to make it into the 80s or 90s. We have, just the other day on TV, I saw a gal who, I think she was in France, and they were talking about how she beat the virus, and she's 110 years old.
Wow.
For her, if she was not thinking long term, when she was 60, she has 50 more years, and she's still functioning, and she was right. sitting up and having a conversation. So, you got to be long term. Outlook's got to be long term. I always tell clients or anybody who speaks with us that when we invest money, we don't put it away unless we do have like 3 to 5 year time horizon at minimum.
Right.
And even then we would want to be conservative because it's very hard to, get a good market cycle, call it, or just in general good outcome if you go shorter because you just don't know. 3 years, what if there's two bad years in a year, you might be flat. You could have 3 years in a row that are down. If you go out to 5 years, chances of that are getting smaller. It's just statistically right. possible, obviously, but the longer you go, the more likely you are to achieve a return you're looking for.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. We just got to give it time, right? Yes. That's when you talk about the average return. You got to give it time because when we look at those sort of things, you don't want to be in a situation where you need 10% return in the next 3 months, right? We talked about 3 to 5 years, and absolutely. Any money that you're going to need over the next 6 months, mm-hmm. 3 months, we have folks that ask us all the time, hey, we sold our house. We're going to buy this piece of property. We're going to build a house. I got $200,000. It's burning a hole in my pocket. What can we invest it in?
Yeah. But I'll need it in 6 months.
No, right. I said, do you have a money clip? Put it under your bed mattress. Right. Cause the idea is if you got, if you got that money that's burning a hole in your pocket, and if you need the $200K to build that house, it's likely that we could, make you $20,000 over the next 6 months. It's just as likely we could lose you $20,000, right? Because we don't know what's happening in the market.
Yeah, it's just too short. It's gambling at that point. If you really truly need the money, I would, as you mentioned, last week we talked about, we recommend things based as if you were recommending us to your mom, right?
Yeah.
And I did tell her, by the way, to listen to the show. I saw her the other day, and she said she'd tune in, but I wouldn't.
She's a good liar.
No, I think she'll listen, because I kind of made it more exciting than it was, and it wasn't just, you know, a quick mention, but hopefully she listens. Anyway, you know, it's just like, would you put your mom's money in for 6 months into something? No, right. Of course not.
No.
You know, even though we're in the business and, you know, people think, oh, you might have some secret account that can make some sort of a nice return. There's no such thing.
Right.
6 months, a year, 2 years, it's just not long enough of a time frame to put money in that you know you're going to need.
Yeah.
The 3 to 5 year number I usually toss out is for people that think, okay, well, it's at least going to be that long, but more likely longer. But if somebody says 3 years, I probably wouldn't even go too heavy into investing if it's that long, just because of the uncertainty, you know?
Yeah, unless you're willing to take that risk, right?
Unless you're okay with the fact that, hey, we could be up, we could be down, and then we talk about what risk you should take, and we can kind of estimate, you know, what's the probability of you being up or down, and what that looks like, right?
Right.
Using just
absolutely
math. Yeah.
Well, there's, you know, there's other options, and there's, you know, it all comes back to the plan. And, you know, I knew we need to take a break here, but it all comes back to your financial plan, your particular plan, what works for you, and what do we need to do to get you to those goals. So if you'd like to have that plan done, if you'd like to have that reviewed, give us a call, 503-253-3000. We'd be happy to meet with you. We have offices here in Beaverton, Tigard, Vancouver, and Clackamas that we'd love to sit down with you and take that time. And we're happy to do it virtually as well. We are all set up with our, you know, with everybody. It's ubiquitous now. Everybody knows how to Zoom. So we're happy to do Zoom or do it over the phone, whatever's easier for you. So give us a call, 503-253-3000, or visit pfgwm.com. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
When planning for income and retirement, there's a lot to consider. Between managing the budget that fits the family, trying to figure out from where to draw your income, or balancing the tax ramifications of withdrawals, moving into retirement can be overwhelming. At Price Financial Group, we help clients work to create a sustainable retirement roadmap, addressing these concerns and more, and helping folks feel confident in their future retirement income, right when they need it most. If you'd like a financial plan tailored just for you, please don't hesitate and call our office today at 503-253-3000 or text REVIEW to 484848 to set up your complimentary consultation. Price Financial Group offers investment advisory services through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm.
We do Investing Simplified.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
We are back with Investing Simplified. Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Matt Sudol. And we've been talking a little bit about risk-adjusted returns. We've been talking about, you know, doing plans and what we see coming in the markets. One thing that, you know, I think it's important to note when we talk about returns, and you mentioned the 3 to 5 year time frame. When we talk about, you know, average returns, or when folks say they need a certain average return, I think a lot of people need to really rethink what an average return looks like, right? Because an average isn't, you know, you add multiple numbers together, you divide it by the, you know, the number of inputs, and then that gets you an average, right? But if you're averaging 5%, that doesn't mean that you're getting 5% every year. And most people, when they do a plan, if they do the basic plan that you can get for free on you know, online at various different places. I don't want to cast aspersions on different custodians that offer it. It's great that they offer it.
Right.
But if you're not working with an advisory team, a fiduciary planner that is getting this plan out for you to show you all the pitfalls that come, it just says, well, you need to average 7%. Most 401ks have this, right? Or 403b plans say, hey, if you average 6% a year for the next, you know, however many years, you're going to get, but it doesn't actually average. It gives you a 6% compound return, mm-hmm. which we both know is not the case. Matt mentioned earlier that when you look at the long-term average of the stock market, it's 8%.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you get 8% compounded every year, right? And what, you know, what a lot of people fail to realize is that an average return doesn't really mean what you think it does, right? So think about this. And when you're, if you're got a pen handy, it's easier to follow my math because I tend to go too fast. But if you have $100,000, okay, and if you had a return of minus 10% in that first year, so you went down 10%.
90.
Yep. And then you went up 10%. That's an average. 99. Right. Well, so you're skipping ahead. You're going through too fast with the math, Matt.
Oh, sorry.
But so if you got a minus 10% and a plus 10%, what's your average return? It's zero, right? Because minus 10 plus 10 divided by 2 mm-hmm. is zero. But just go back to, you got $100,000. You got a minus 10%. Where are we at?
90.
And you get a plus 10%. Where are you at? Right.
99.
So you actually down 1%. You actually had a negative 1% real return, right? Yeah.
It's one of your favorite subjects you'd like to talk about, the sequence of returns.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a big key, right? The sequence of returns in the market. And that's when we talk about where we see the market being extended and whether or not it's, you know, it's extended from a standpoint that it can't go higher. I think it can. I think the path of least resistance is still up. But if you're getting, if you are retiring in a year like this, if you retire, as Matt said, you put your money in the S&P 500 and you retire into October 2007.
Sure.
Whoops. Yeah. Right?
Well, the drastic number that I tell people once sometimes is, imagine if you lost 50%. So the same number, 100,000 becomes 50,000. Well, how much do you need to make it back up to 100,000?
You need 100% return.
Yeah. And that's quite a bit. I mean, it could take you easily a decade of returns to get back up there, you know? And that could have, you know, so let's say, as you said, you retire and this happens, what do you do next? You know, you have to draw from the portfolio potentially, which will dig you in deeper into the hole. So, you know, or do you go back to work? So that's exactly where, you know, I chatted with some people in the last couple of weeks and we're talking about, you know, when we get closer to retirement, we take the foot off the gas slowly.
Yeah.
Because somebody asked me, well, I don't know if I want to be aggressive like this all the time or growth oriented all the time. I said, well, you're in your mid to late 30s, so this is normal. And, you know, we get into mid to late 40s or 50s, we go moderate, and then we, you know, go conservative, depending on what your goals are and needs. You know, there are obviously clients that would be, you know, aggressive in their 60s, and so each situation is completely different. But normally, you know, the closer you get to retirement, the less risk you want to take on, because if there is a pullback, you know, what happens, you know?
Well, and you want to make sure that the risk applies to your particular situation in that plan, right? Yeah. How much risk do we need to take to get there? Can we, because we want to make sure we don't have to stand that 50% downswing, right? And we have to make sure that, you know, we have plans in place and processes in place to avoid that. Right. And one of those things that we use in that situation is going back to that plan. And do we need to have this much risk? Because there's a lot of times where we talk to folks that have too much risk. Right. They're out, you know, too far extended out over their skis. Yep. And you want to make sure that they're going to avoid that 50% downswing.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's not necessarily that they want the risk. They just don't realize they have it. That's been a popular one where, you know, they've put some money aside. You know, I just ran into somebody the other day where they put money aside. They had an inherited account that they, you know, got from a family member who unfortunately passed away, and it was set aside and kind of forgotten. They, you know, take some money out of it each year, but they haven't really been paying that much attention. And so over time, markets ratcheted up and the portfolio gotten more aggressive. And so then we run the analysis and they're like, oh man, well, no wonder it's been doing well. But I'm like, well, here's what could happen if we had a pullback. And it's kind of an eye-opener, but then they usually appreciate. They're like, hey, thank you so much for letting me know about this, because I can make changes now before I experience a drawdown, you know? And so it's very helpful.
I agree. Just to take a look, right? To take to get that, you know, get that second pair of eyes,
temperature check. And then if you're in exactly where you need to be from your goals perspective, great. The other part of it is, and we talked about this before, the emotion and, you know, what can you stomach? You know, just because you need a, let's say, a 7% return, and you know, can you get there with with what your stomach can handle? You know, can you be through the volatility and not go to cash and panic? Or, you know, what else can you do? Well, you could spend less or reduce your goals, and that's how, you know, maybe you get a 5% return, which will be more palatable with what you're used to, or you can handle risk-wise. And then, you know, just deploy a different strategy. That's all. So there's different levers you can pull. It's not all about, you know, I need 7%, so no matter what happens, I have to stick with that. You know, you've got options typically.
Right. And the idea is just to keep it balanced, right? And we try to balance that out, the risk in the portfolio in the market exposure. We want to, you know, risk in terms of interest rate risk, in terms of, you know, political, geopolitical risk, in terms of, you know, tax risk. You know, a lot of people are concerned about taxes, and we actually had a good question that came
in. We did have a great question. I have it up here pulled up.
Okay.
And So if guest 716 is listening, they can listen, tune in. But, you know, we've got a person that's in their 50s. We've got, about $1.5 million saved away in retirement and Roth IRAs, working, may have a pension and such from the government. And they had a really good question that isn't necessarily risk related, but it's related to what we've tax talked risk. About. Tax, you know, it's taxes, but risk when it comes to tax. And so they're living in Oregon currently, and so they're paying the Oregon income tax, but they're likely going to move to Washington, and Washington does not have state income tax. So the question is, you know, should I be putting money away still in the Roth account, or do I do it in a traditional since I get that write-off, and then, you know, when I pull it in Washington, I won't have to pay the tax. So a very good question. Sounds like this person's actually in, you know, very good shape already, just taking a look, good saver, and you know, done some things, but obviously also thinking about the future.
Right. Well, it's big to plan for taxes, and we can't give a blanket recommendation, obviously, because everybody's situation is different. Personally, my personal opinion is I want to have as much in Roth as possible, because I look at tax rate. You know, and this is, we'll get back to his specific question or her. His wife also. So I'm assuming, making an assumption.
Maybe. Yeah.
But we'll get back to guess what 762 in a second. But the idea being, you know, when I look at taxes long term, I don't see a situation where taxes are lower federally in the future than they are now. And I don't see a situation where they're lower in Oregon.
Right. So that's kind of where my mind went initially when I saw the question. I was thinking about it, and we focus primarily on the federal tax side, you know. So that's why, you know, because they're higher and everybody's prone to that. Nobody gets out of federal taxes. You know, it's one of those that
death and taxes, the two things.
Taxes, federal taxes, especially. But I mean, it's an interesting concept. So, you know, I mean, you could do fully Roth. You could do maybe split it up between. Sounds like this person's already doing some Roth contribution, you know, because what if, you know, you get closer, you know, this person in their 50s, I mean, life changes. Let's say you get to 65 or whatever, you retire, and then you don't move to Washington, you're still in Oregon.
Right.
Because, you know, maybe you love Bend all of a sudden, you're going to move there instead. And like, hey, man, you know what, I forget that. So life changes, so you kind of plan a little bit towards maybe both, maybe mix it up.
Let's get back to I mean, ideally, we like to have buckets, equal buckets, in terms of taxable, tax-free, and tax-deferred, because we don't know what's going to happen in the future from a tax perspective. I personally believe that the taxes are going to go up. There's just too much spending federally. And but the other thing to think about is not just living in the state of Oregon versus living in the state of Washington, but you have to think about your tax rate overall once you get to retirement too, right? So yes, you're going to be in conceivably a lower tax bracket in retirement, unless you have pensions and then you have you have Social Security, and then you have the distributions coming from your retirement plans, whether you have to live on them or just in the RMD stage. And it's really nice to have different levers to pull. You mentioned levers in terms of a portfolio, but when you're in retirement, ideally I'd like to have a mix. You want to have Roth, you want to have traditional, you want to have a taxable account, right? That's outside of retirement plans, because there's big differences in terms of the taxability of it, right? So when they're talking, he's talking about, I'm paying Oregon income tax on it now because I'm putting it into Roth rather than putting it into traditional.
Right.
Right. So that's that. It's paying 9%, but then it's growing tax-free, and you're paying the federal tax rate at a conceivably lower than what I think it'll be in the future. We don't know.
Yeah.
But the other thing to think about besides just the pure taxability portion for living off of that money, because it sounds like doing pretty well. We've got, you know, a pension that's going to pay 35 to 40K a year. Add Social Security. Obviously, he's making good money if he's got that much money saved in retirement. There's a good amount of retirement assets. So the next conversation about taxes comes from not just income, right? Income taking the money out, because I like to have the Roth bucket just in case when clients call and say, hey, we're going to take a trip to Tahiti, I need 5K.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to have options to pull that to not bump you into the next tax bracket. And the big key from that is having options, right? Getting to, you choose when the taxation happens. But B, let's talk about, there are two things to keep in mind that a lot of people forget about from a tax perspective when they think about deferring it now and paying it later. One is Medicare. And a lot of people forget about the, you know, I call it IRMA, but the increased Medicare tax. And, you know, basically, if you make too much money while on Medicare, then your premiums go up for a whole year, 2 years after you make too much money. So that's part of the calculation, right? Yep. The other big piece, and this is a big piece for me because we work with a lot of clients that a big part of their estate or their plan to leave a legacy is retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. So when you leave a retirement account to your heirs, they now, as of current tax law, and who knows what it'll change about it, but I imagine that they're not going to, again, not going to lower taxes.
Probably not.
On retirement accounts. But your heirs have to take that entire, have to liquidate that entire retirement account within 10 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's in their highest earning years. They don't have to do that with a Roth. They have to liquidate it within 10 years.
It's a spouse, but that, you know, that goes.
Right. Yeah. But that just goes to the, we're still looking at the next generation, right?
So, next generation.
So if you're looking at a Roth, they still have to remove that money over 10 years, but the government's getting cut out of it. And we, one of the really cool things when, you know, this is again, the blanket statement in terms of, overall, this person, the true answer, you know, that we'd want to give and we want to make sure that we're giving, and we gave on the text line directly, but is that, hey, it applies to your specific situation and your specific goals to take a look at whether it makes more sense to pay the 9% in Oregon now or to not pay it and then kick the can down the road. But if you're preparing to leave a legacy, if you're looking to leave this money behind, particularly if you're looking to leave it to a, you know, a generation down, even, you know, not even your kids, but maybe your grandkids, the Roth is just, in my personal opinion, a way better factor to do that, because I'd rather disinherit the government personally. I'd rather Uncle Sam doesn't get more money than my kids, right? And it's a huge, there's a lot of different ways and a lot of different methods to pull, but one, you know, there's a big problem that a lot of folks are coming up against now is they've just traditionally hung everything in their traditional 401k or their traditional IRA.
And as you said, because it's been around longer, so people are, you've been used to it, you know, the Roth hasn't been around as long, but, you know, and then with this situation or any other ones, I would encourage to still take the step further, dive in, do a more detailed plan, look at some projections and just kind of get more specific, because, you know, there are some little things that you want to make sure you pay attention to. You know, we can give, you know, sounds like you're Team Roth over here.
Usually,
you
know? Usually.
Yeah. And I tend to agree. I think that it's a good option. But each situation will be a little bit different. I mean, maybe there's a mix where it's an 80-20, 80% Roth, 20% traditional, and there's a reason for that. So it takes a little bit more modeling, I would call it. I call it modeling. When you sort of do the projections and you look at the data input plan, you put in the information, as long as it's accurate, and then I call it modeling. I take it and I model it into a plan for you. So then we can figure out exactly what you need to do in your specific situation. And then it also dovetails into distributions, because when you are retired, what bucket do you pull from at what time? I had a person that called us, and I was asking about that, and they weren't really getting a straight answer from their advisor of figuring out, well, do I put it out of the Roth? Do I pull things out of the traditional? What do I do? And, you know, they just sort of, well, you can pull it from here or here, whatever you want.
Right.
You know, and I felt like, you know, hey, there should be a little bit more thought behind that too. You know, you can't be exact, but you can at least give them an explanation what plan A or plan B would do. And then obviously consult with an accountant and say, hey, here's what we're doing. What do you think? Does that make sense? Are we on the right track?
Absolutely. And that's the biggest key is you got to get a holistic view, right? Everything with a dollar sign before we can make a blanket recommendation. But in general, it makes sense. It totally makes, you know, makes sense to do that analysis. But that's why we ask for all those details when we do those plans for folks, right? And we coordinate with a CPA, and it's a good question. I think, you know, the gist of it is it comes down to where you believe taxes will be in retirement, right? And then where you believe your tax bracket's going to be.
Yeah, and it's more federal than state, because that's the bigger chunk. And as you said, in, you know, if you put interest, you're skipping the state tax, but you're also skipping the federal. And federal is much higher. And, you know, this individual, if they've accrued this much wealth, they probably have a pretty decent income. So they're, you know.
But then it's, like you said, then it's sort of, it balances out. It's hard to know, because if you're making that much money, then do we put it in the Roth or do we get it, you know, off the federal
income? You have to kind of, as you said, look at the, you know, tax situation from a, you know, just look at the returns and what's happened and, you know, lots of factors. So it's hard to just make a blanket statement, but, you know, it could almost go, I don't know, about 50-50 either way, but, you know, there's, you can make a case either way, really.
Yeah.
It's just what makes more, you know, and once you have specifics on an individual or a family, you can then make more of a specific recommendation that is suited for them, you know, versus just, you know, in general. So
yeah, absolutely. So that was a great question. If you have questions like that you'd like to get answered on the air, go to investingsimplifiedradio.com. We are currently unable to respond directly once they come in just because of SEC compliance requirements, but we're happy to cover it on the air and we're happy to respond directly. It just may take us a little while to get back to you.
And you can always email us the question if you'd like more you know, information on it, or if the chat box is for some reason not malfunctioning, and you just email askbo@pfgwm.com.
Perfect. And, you know, I think that's a good place for us to end for today. I appreciate you guys tuning in. I appreciate everyone who listens. I want to say thank you to Matt and Matt for being on the show with us today, obviously, although they're required to, so I don't really have to say thank you. But if you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, if you want a portfolio review, like we said, these are options and these are reviews and in-depth plans that we do for folks that other shops around town will charge upwards of $1,000 just to sit down with them. We do it absolutely free for radio listeners. Give us a call, 503-253-3000, or visit www.pfgwm.com. Thanks for listening. This has been Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management.
The opinions voiced in Investing Simplified with Bo Caldwell are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Investors cannot invest directly in indexes. The performance of any index is not indicative of the performance of any investment and does not take into account the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. Guests on Investing Simplified are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.